Chapter 4. Getting Out of Jail. Next morning, a guard came at 8 a.m.
"It's your lucky day," he said. "You're both getting out."
Hubble looked frightened. He felt safer in jail. The guard took us downstairs, and we stepped out into the sun. There were two cars waiting. A dark green Chevrolet, and a black Bentley. There was a blonde woman in the Bentley. Hubble's wife, I guessed. He hurried toward her. Officer Roscoe got out of the other car. She looked great, in jeans and a soft white shirt.
"Hello, Roscoe," I said.
"Hello, Reacher," she said. And smiled. Her voice was wonderful.
We got into her car and drove off. Getting out of jail felt good.
"What happened?" I asked her.
"Yesterday, Finley and I checked your story. The bus driver remembered you getting off the bus at the Highway Cloverleaf at 8 a.m. on Friday. Then we checked with the military police. We got a match with your fingerprints from them at 2:30 p.m. Everything that you said was true. So Finley and I pushed to get you out of jail."
"I'd like to buy you lunch to say thank you," I said.
"Okay," she replied and smiled.
"Are you checking the dead guy's fingerprints again?" I asked.
"Yes, but why did you ask for that?"
"Because the first answer came back too quickly. It took 14 hours to match my fingerprints, but only 6 hours not to find a match for him."
"You're right. Maybe Baker made a mistake."
We drove into town. She left me in the center, and we agreed to meet later. After lunch with Roscoe, I planned to get out of Georgia and never come back. I had a coffee in an empty cafe and walked back to the police station. Roscoe was in the big office area, looking worried.
"Finley found another body near the warehouse," she said.
"Do you know who this one is?" I asked.
"No, Finley has gone to get Hubble. He thinks that he may know something."
I knew that the dead man met the investigator with the shaved head, but I didn't say anything.
Finley came in.
"Roscoe, we're going to the hospital to look at the bodies. You too, Reacher. I need to talk to you," he said.
"Hubble wasn't at home," Finley said in the car. "I'm sure that he knows something."
"What did he tell you, Reacher?"
"Nothing. We didn't speak much all weekend," I lied. "So what about this new body?"
"His name is Sherman. That's all we know," said Finley. "On the back of his watch, it says, 'To Sherman, love Judy.' We're checking his fingerprints."
At the hospital, a doctor took us to his office. He talked about the two bodies and the gun that killed them. While the doctor was talking, his phone rang.
"It's Officer Stevenson for you," he said to Finley.
Finley took the phone and listened.
"Send it to us here," he said into the phone. "We've got a match on the first guy's fingerprints," he told us.
A few minutes later, a piece of paper came out of the machine next to me. I picked it up and looked at it. I went cold. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. "The guy was my brother," I said. "Joe Reacher."
It felt like the floor was opening up. The world changed in a second. They took me to see the body. He had no face, but I knew that it was my brother. Then Finley drove us back to Margrave. Roscoe sat with me in the back and held my hand all the way. At the police station, we went straight to the interview room.
"I'm very sorry about your brother," said Finley.
I nodded.
"I'm afraid that I'm going to have to ask you a lot of questions now," he went on.
I told him everything I could about Joe. He was 38, not married. He lived in Washington and worked for the Treasury. That was all I knew. I last saw him 7 years ago.
"Do you know why he was in Margrave in the spring?"
"No, he didn't say. He only told me about Blind Blake," I said. But Hubble knew. Joe was Hubble's investigator. What was he doing for him? I had to find Hubble and ask him. Joe was dead, and I had to do something about it. I went outside, and Roscoe followed me.
"Are you okay?" she asked. "Can I give you a ride somewhere?"
"Will you show me where Hubble lives?" I said.
"Shouldn't we leave that to Finley?"
She looked worried. "I just want to see if he's home. If he is, we'll call Finley." Hubble's house was huge, with a beautiful garden and a swimming pool at the side. There was nobody home, but after a few minutes, the Bentley drove in. Hubble's wife got out with two children, a boy and a girl. Roscoe and I introduced ourselves.
"I'm Charlie," the woman said, sending the children into the house. "I need to thank you, Mr. Reacher," she went on. "You saved my husband's life in prison."
"No problem," I said. "Where is he?"
"He'll be back later,"
Charlie said. We talked for a while. It was obvious that Charlie knew nothing about the trouble that her husband was in. She thought that her husband was arrested by mistake.
"Please tell your husband to call us as soon as he comes back," Roscoe said.
Then she turned and put her hand on my arm.
"Let's go,"
she said. She likes me too, I thought suddenly. For the first time since Friday, I wasn't sorry that I got off the bus.
"Will you be around for a while?"
Roscoe asked me when we were back in the car. "I guess I will," I replied, "until I discover what happened to my brother." And then she kissed me.
"You can stay with me,"
she said. When I woke up on Monday morning, Roscoe wasn't there. There was a message from her on the kitchen table. "Meet me at Eno's at 11 a.m. Kiss, kiss." When I arrived at Eno's, Roscoe's Chevrolet was outside, next to a new black truck. As I was going into the diner, a tall, strong man of about 30 came out. He had black hair and a thick neck. He stared as he passed me. "Who's that guy?" I asked Roscoe as I sat down.
"Kleiner's son," she said. "Kleiner owns the warehouses up near the highway, where your brother's body was found. He's very rich, and he gives a lot of money to the town. We got an ID on the second body,"
she went on.
His name was Sherman Stoller. His fingerprints matched with an arrest made 2 years ago in Florida. Do you know that name?
I shook my head. Her phone rang.
Sorry, I'll take this outside, she said, getting up. Can you order me a cheese sandwich?
Sure. Which one is our waitress?
The one with the glasses, she said.
I watched her outside, talking on her phone. Then, her face looked terrible. She was waving her arms at me. She was telling me that she had to go and that I should stay in the diner. I went cold. I knew what that phone call was about. Hubble was dead. I needed him, but he was dead. I sat at our table, staring at the waitresses. The smaller one was prettier and had longer hair. Behind her glasses, she had nice eyes. The two women were different in lots of ways, but Roscoe said the one with glasses. That was the most obvious thing. It was the same with Hubble and me when we arrived at Warburton Jail on Friday. Spivey saw a man with glasses and a man without them. But the next morning, in the bathroom, I had glasses on when the men came in and attacked me. Spivey ordered them to kill the one with the glasses. It was Hubble they wanted to kill, not me. I asked the waitress to call me a taxi. 10 minutes later, the taxi was turning into Beckman Drive. I was thinking about police cars with flashing lights outside of Hubble's house, Roscoe and Finley inside the house, looking at the bodies of Hubble and his family. But there were no police cars outside of Hubble's house. I jumped out of the taxi and hurried to the front door. Before I got there, the door flew open.
Paul's disappeared,
Charlie screamed. So they took Hubble, I thought, but not his family.
He was here this morning,
Charlie said.
But he's not at work. He got a call earlier telling him to stay home. I took the children to school, and when I got back, he was gone. But his phone is still here, and his jacket, and his keys,
she cried.
His car is in the garage, but he never walks anywhere. Please, Mr. Reacher, you've got to find him. Please help me.
There was nothing I could do. I knew that Finley and Roscoe were looking at Hubble's body right now. You stay here, I said. Can you lend me your car? She pulled some keys out of her bag and gave them to me. I jumped in the Bentley and was soon back at the station. There were a lot of police cars outside. Inside, I saw Baker, Stevenson, Finley, Roscoe, and some other officers. They all looked terrible. No one was speaking. I waited by Roscoe's desk, and finally she came over. She was crying.
It was horrible, she said.
Then Finley looked over at me and pointed to the interview room. I followed him in. Finley was shaking. What happened? I asked. It was bad, he said. One of the worst I've seen. They used knives. But there's worse. His wife. What do you mean, his wife? I said. I saw her 20 minutes ago.
What are you talking about? Who did you see? Finley said.
Charlie Hubble, his wife. She's okay. They didn't get her. Why are you talking about Hubble? Finley said. I stared at him. Who are you talking about? I asked. Who just got killed? Finley looked at me like I was crazy. I thought you knew, he said. Chief Morrison, the chief of police, and his wife.